Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Greater New York Hospital Association RRS Collaborative Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions on how to participate will be given at that time. If anyone requires assistance during today's call, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Hillary Jalon.
Hi, thanks everyone for joining us this afternoon. We're excited to be here. And as most of you know, the primary topic of this particular conference call is on the data collection. So before we get to the agenda, I'll just say that with me here, I have Terry Straub, Vice President of Quality and Patient Safety here at GNYHA.
Good afternoon.
And we also have in our subconference Rafael Ruiz. A lot of you have become familiar with him this week and over the past couple of weeks. He is new at the Greater New York Hospital Association. He's the Assistant Director of Clinical Research for their theory organization. And one other person that I want to introduce that's with us today is Janet Nagamini. Dr. Nagamini, as a lot of you would know, was with us at the first rapid response system learning session in October, and we're really happy that she's able to join us today to share a little bit of her insights about some of the data that we have collected through the collaborative, that all of you have collected through the collaborative, and then just share an overview of the upcoming SBAR training sessions, which, as you saw through the email, we do have confirmed dates of April 12th and 13th. And a little bit later in the call, Janet will take you through a bit about what the sessions entail on both of the days and the goals and which session is right for which kinds of folks in hospitals. So before that, though, without further ado, I want to introduce Rafael Ruiz. He's the Assistant Director of Clinical Research, as I said before, here at GNYHA, and he is going to present some of the data for the collaborative. Yesterday, along with an updated agenda, we had sent out to you a spreadsheet. It was an Excel file, and it contained three different tabs. Rafael is going to go through each one of those tabs with you, talk about some issues about the hospital-specific data, and we're going to get some comments from you on what you think about reporting. One thing we should mention, the data that we're going to go through with you today is are the mandatory elements on the data collection forms, so not any of the voluntary elements, just the mandatory ones. And the other thing we want to mention, within the reports, as we said to you, there were hospital-specific blinded codes. We did not share discharge data, so no one will know who anyone is on the grids that we'll be showing. But we did contact each day-to-day primary contact and let them know which code coincides with their hospital. So your primary contact at your hospitals know your specific code. And without further ado, we'll go to Rafael with the data.
Hello, everyone. First, let me Hillary gave a great introduction, and just to say that in the future, you know, if anyone has questions about reporting or their data, to please feel free to give me a call whenever you need to. And so, let me just begin with the first handout entitled Survey Submissions. You'll see, as Hillary mentioned, the blinded numbers for hospitals in the furthest left column, and then you'll see a group column. The group column all clearly is all hospitals in the collaborative, and then what we did was we created an A group and a B group. We did this for analytic purposes because we learned that not everybody, did not come into the collaborative without an RRS or an RRT. And so group A are those hospitals which had an RRS in place during the base period. So between May and October of 06, there was already some system in place that met the RRS definition. The Group B hospitals are those that did not have a system in place during the base period. So that's what the two groups are. And you can see in the next column to the right, the members column, the breakdown of how many hospitals fall into each of the groups. The following columns off to your right, codes, exclusions, those represent the initial surveys that were sent out at the very beginning of the collaborative, asking for definitions and reporting of codes and definitions in which units would be excluded from for reporting purposes. And so, again, you can see percent responses for those surveys. The next column over is a base column, which represents the base period, again, May to October. And clearly, everyone submitted data for that period of time. And then the post period, the official post period, November through January, you see the breakdown of responses. Not full compliance yet, but I know I've spoken to some hospitals already, and I know that your data is on its way. So really the take-home message here for this slide is that we don't have all the data right now. So that's one caveat for when we present the rest of these data. Just remember that we don't have all the data in right now. Having all the data in our possession really is beneficial from two points of view. One, for analytic purposes, it really allows us to tell you the full story of what's going on. And two, really it's more of an institution-specific reason that if we're able to give you the full story as the data tell, then hopefully that can facilitate your own institution-specific quality improvement efforts for your RRS team. So moving on to the second handout, it's entitled Data from the Rapid Response System Collaborative. Again, the furthest left column is the blinded hospital code. And you can see a breakdown by month of submission and again by group. It's just the survey response columns are just a reiteration of what we just went through on the previous handout, but they're there just for completeness in case you want to reference them. And then the data are to the right, and we're calling it comparable data because the data have been converted to per 1,000 discharges for reporting. So the first thing you see is the calls per 1,000 subheading, and that encompasses the RRS calls that were reported by shift and for total calls. So you see the shift data there represented by the day, evening, and night columns. One thing I was told that the collaborative was interested in learning was when these calls were being made. Were they being made during the day, during the night, or during the evening? And overall, you could see that most calls came during the day period, the day shift. And you could see that fewer calls in the evening and fewer calls even in the night shift. So that's one point. The second point that I want to make with these data are that theoretically the number of calls in the three shifts should collectively add up to the total reported calls made to the RRS. And so in order to check that, we added up the calls by shift, and you see that in the sum of shift column. To the right, you see reported total, so that is the data element on the survey form where hospitals reported their total calls to the RRS. And then there's a column entitled difference, and so that's the difference in the total calls reported and the calls reported in the shift periods. And you can see that for several of the months, they don't match up. And even for November through January, where it looks like they are even, actually, if you have some time now or later, you can scroll, you can look down in the column entitled Difference. And if you see any number, if you don't see a dash, that means that there was a difference between the number of calls reported by shift and the number of calls, total calls reported. A number which you see in parentheses means that it is a negative number, meaning that there were more shift calls reported than total calls, which clearly should not be the case. And so one of the things during the discussion period that I would I'm hoping we can talk about is whether or not we should continue with reporting calls by shift and by total. And that's something I hope to discuss with you. Moving on, under the tab Average Minutes Per Call, you'll see two columns, response time and encounter time. Again, these are data elements that were reported. I will say that the encounter time, there were more problems in reporting that data element than the response time. And I think part of it may have been just the data collection process that everyone had in place before. And again, something I would like to maybe touch on during our discussion period. And as far as the response time goes, you could see that between the all group at top and then the A and the B group, there isn't too much difference to talk about there. In the encounter time, however, if you notice, at the top, the all group for the period October through January, you see in October there's an average of 17 minutes per encounter. And then it jumps in November, December, and January. And so one way to answer that is to then look at the group-specific data, and you see that group A for November through January has roughly about a 35-minute or so encounter time. And then group B for the November-December period has almost an hour, so almost double what group A. This you know, we find this to be reasonable because, again, group A have had experience with their RRS prior to implementation, prior to joining the collaborative, and group B hospitals are implementing brand new systems. So we don't find this to be unreasonable. Moving off to your right, you will see a codes per 1,000 tab. The total column is, again, one of the data elements that were reported on the data sheet. It was actually the number of codes data element. We've called that total here. And then there's the non-ICU codes reported. In theory, according to Dr. Rosen, he explained to me that these two figures in an ideal situation should be similar. And so what we did was we investigated whether or not that was true. And so we created a column that we entitled Difference, and then we put ICU in with a question mark there in parentheses. And you can see that there's actually quite a bit of variation between the total, what we're considering total codes reported and the non-ICU codes reported. And again, this is something I'd like to touch on during the discussion because it brings up a couple of questions. One is, as indicated by the parentheses in that difference column, is the difference that we're seeing really codes being called in an ICU setting? Or is it a result of data reporting that is not uniform across hospitals? possibly this might be due to different definitions of what a code is or where a code is technically allowed to be called. And so these are just some questions that we would like to discuss with you all during the discussion period. You'll see a column marked higher of. That is the higher of either the total codes reported or the non-ICU codes reported. And so the rationale there is that irrespective of how the codes are being defined, they're still codes according to your reporting. And so we created this column to see if there's any overall reduction in codes, because that's really the whole point of RRS, really to reduce the number of codes and then, as a result, have hopefully better patient outcomes. And you can see that Group A has slightly fewer on average calls compared to Group B. But again, we don't find that particularly unreasonable, again, because Group B is brand new to the RRS scene, and there's always a adjustment period that needs to be dealt with. The final column that you'll see is mortality, deaths per thousand. And really, there's not too much to say there. Everything remains fairly static across the three categories that we're presenting here, all A and B, and that was expected. So there's not too much to say there. The last thing I want to go over quickly is the third handout. And what that is a proposal that we would like to make to the collaborative members as a potential way of streamlining the data collection, and also as a potential way of addressing some of the questions that I've brought up in my presentation, and also some of the potential reporting issues, again, that I've sort of highlighted as I went through the numbers. And then just very quickly, we're proposing that we streamline the survey form to basically you tell us the month that we're reporting in, the discharges for your institution, the number of codes, so we would bring that down to a single line, and we would need to talk about how we would define that element in order to make this feasible. Report mortality. And then for the calls, we would propose that instead of having you average the encounter times and the call times and all that, we would propose that you just give us individual information on each call, which to my understanding is you're already collecting. So it's not that we're asking extra of you. We're actually asking less of you, because right now you're needing to do some computation to get these numbers to us, and we would like maybe just to stick to how it is you're collecting the data and report that just straight from your either log, or I know some of you may have RRS encounter forms. And so, for example, under RRS calls, you see the number one, so that would be the first call, and then you would say what date it took place. You would give the time to response, and then the start time and end time of the encounter. And again, we would need to talk about what that would mean, whether it is the first person on the scene and the last person on the scene, or if it's a dedicated individual, for example, an ICU nurse, that would define when an encounter starts and ends. So that, again, is part of the discussion I'm hoping to have with all of you. And that's really it for me. And I look forward to taking your questions a little later.
Thanks so much, Raphael. One thing that Terry and I just want to let you know we spent a lot of time going through the data at the beginning of the collaborative, and now that we've taken a look at this, it seems like there are some discrepancies in the data, and we just want to make the data collection as easy as possible for you. So that's why we're having this discussion. Janet, is there anything else that you want to add about the data and what you saw before we open it up for questions?
I just wanted to add that it's not unusual that as part of the learning curve, you go through these questions where you're stepping back and redefining exactly what is a code, what is a preventable code, et cetera. So I can elaborate more after the discussion, but that this is not at all unusual to see.
Thanks, Janet. So just some of the things that Raphael brought up, you know, the codes, we want to hear from you about the codes by shift, what you think of that, and then what you think about this potential streamlined monthly data collection versus what you're doing now. So, Matthew, whenever you're ready to open it up for questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the queue for any reason, you may do so by pressing the pound button. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. Our first question comes from Amy Adame.
Yes, hi. I'm calling from North Shore Hospital. Hillary, I'm looking at the proposed form for the monthly survey form, and I'm wondering, at Manhasset, we are rolling out the rapid response team a few units at a time. So right now we have it on all our medical units. We haven't yet gone into our surgical units, but we hope to move there shortly. So if I am to enter the discharges, would I just tally only the medical patients for now? Would that affect all these other numbers, for example, the deaths? The codes would be based on those units only and then the discharges too?
Dr. Adomi, we have, and you probably know this, we have been asking for total charges.
All right, because I've just been giving you totals.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That you have been doing that correctly. We kind of followed the IHI guidelines.
Right. Okay. Not a problem. Thank you.
You've been doing that correctly.
Okay. And the codes, would you want to include the ICUs or not? Because I think my data excludes all ICUs, but I'm not sure if you're going to be lumping those back in.
And we had a conversation about that. So I think that's something that we want to talk about here is for the collaborative, how do we want to define the code?
Okay.
So and we had it at first we were counting the codes as any code, the total number of codes was any code excluding the ED codes, and then we also had codes occurring outside of the ICU as another. We had two different code data elements.
Right.
So I think part of what we want to hear from all of you today, I know we're revisiting the code discussion, but since we've seen so many different discrepancies in the data, we wanted to revisit the code discussion a bit today.
Okay.
So if you have any comments on that, Dr. Adomi, we'll take them, and then if you don't, we can open it back up.
My suggestion would be to really include only the codes on the floors and exclude the ICUs. The reason being we want to look at rescue, and I think the mindset is that once patients go to the ICU, they're at the highest level of care. So what we're trying to do is alert the caretakers early in the process. So I think what would be more pertinent to our data collection would be codes outside of the ICU. But I'm open to suggestions from other people.
Yeah, hi, this is Mark Rosen. Can you hear me?
Hi, Mark. Yes.
Hello. I've been listening all along. I'm walking down a street in Washington, so I'm kept on mute. You know, the plan was always to exclude those units where there would be no need for a rapid response team to come, including the ICU, except in community hospitals, which may not be covered, perhaps, to exclude the emergency department, unless the emergency department depends on a rapid response team to arrive, to exclude the ICU, to exclude the OR, to exclude the ED, and other units similar to that where the rapid response intervention would not be used. So, and the other comment is, yes, we wanted to include total hospital mortality, because let's just use the extreme example. If everybody's dying on the surgical ICU where there are no rapid response teams, well, that's an opportunity for improvement, which we would like to capture in the database. I'm done.
Thanks, Mark. We're glad you can join us.
Anybody else?
Operator, is there anyone else in the queue?
Yes, our next question comes from Vivian Lavelle.
Hi, I'm calling from Lenox Hill Hospital. Actually, my question was different than the topic that we're discussing right now. I have a question regarding the encounter time, especially for the Group A hospitals, and the fact that it has increased from November through January. And does anyone have any comments why they think that has occurred? Now, these are the experienced hospitals, so I'd be very interested in knowing why they think their encounter time has increased.
You know what we'll do? We will ask that question, Vivian, and because none of the hospitals are on this part of the line, unfortunately, this is the speaker line, but we'll take that into account when others get in the queue. And if anyone on the line has some kind of information that they'd like to share with us about why they think the encounter time went up for that group, we will take that too.
So, yeah, hi, it's Mark. I have a hypothesis.
Okay.
Which is, you know, if you're watching something, behavior changes. So perhaps now that everybody was part of the collaborative, there might have been a special effort to reinforce or remind everybody about rapid response teams. I'm making it up. We won't know unless we actually ask the institutions that had the increase.
Right. And one more thing about that, actually, that we should mention, a lot of the hospitals before the collaborative weren't collecting that data. They started to do it at right around the time of the collaborative when we were determining the data collection. So that could have that could be part of it as well. But operator, is there anyone else? And if anyone has an answer to the Lenox Hill question or a hypothesis that they'd like to add about that too, that would be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. Okay, our next caller is Eileen Yost.
Hi, this is Eileen from Roosevelt. We're seeing a longer time in the resuscitative effort because we're really fighting to stabilize the patient as best we can before transport, and sometimes we've actually avoided taking the patient to ICU. So that might account for some of the longer times.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from Lorraine Sherrill.
Yeah, hi. This is Lorraine Farrell from Mather Hospital. I did notice that during January and February, we had an increasing number of evening and night calls. In fact, our night calls, the 11 to 7 shift, outnumbered the day calls, which is very unusual. And because of the lack of support, at least at our hospital in the night, you have the team pretty much doing everything from soup to nuts until that patient is stable, transferred to where they need to be, all the interventions as necessary.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
If you have a question or comment, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. We appear to have no further questions or comments.
Okay. Well, so we do want to hear from you, though. We know that there's a critical mass on the phone, and we need to come to some sort of an agreement on the data collection form. I mean, I guess the main question is, should we keep it the way it is, which we're seeing lack of standardization in the data, a little bit of a difficulty in comparing the data the way it is now, or would you be opposed to changing it to the potential streamlined form that Raphael went through with you that was included on the handout 3 tab of the Excel spreadsheet? So I'd really like to just take some comments from you about that. And then just revisit the code issue, what Mark said about the codes, excluding the ICU codes, the ED, and the OR codes. Just want to get consensus from all of you that you're comfortable with doing that, and that we be reporting codes that way. And Janet or Mark, is there anything else that I missed about the data collection form for Raphael?
I don't think so. Although I would like to just add one more piece about the shift data. So one of the things that might be happening with the shift data to sort of make the numbers not match up with total calls is that not every hospital has 3 8-hour shifts, and or calls could be coming in at that time when personnel are transferring between shifts. And so I don't know if that is a reason, but it's some sort of – it's a possibility I think we should think about possibly moving from, again, reporting by shift to simply giving us a time that the call occurred.
Okay, great. So just again, to repeat that, so reporting, instead of reporting by shift, instead asking you for the times. And again, we think this would be easier because we could just get the data from you from your rapid response log forms. And then the issue about the codes. And those are really the major ones, and just potentially streamlining the form just as we showed you on that third tab of the spreadsheet.
Right. And with the codes, again, sort of echoing what Dr. Rosen was saying a little earlier, it is important to be consistent as how we're going to define these codes and where a legitimate RRS deployment is going to take place.
Hey, it's Mark. You know, legitimate or not, it is what it is. If you call the rapid response team to come, they come. It's just that one would question. I think the whole idea would be that, you know, it would be a rare event for a rapid response team to be called to the operating room, to the emergency room, and to most intensive care units. But I would suggest also that if they got called, they got called. The same as a code, you know. If it happened in the parking lot and you responded, it's a code.
Right. Mark, this is Janet. I think that usually you wouldn't require additional help in an ICU, OR, or ER, but what we did find was that that was actually occurring. And so if nothing else, by tracking that information, how many codes occurred and where did they occur, we actually got some valuable information about our system. And it kind of tested our assumptions about where things happened. And, you know, radiology was a particularly scary place, we found, and that we didn't really realize until we started tracking and documenting where they were getting called to.
Yeah, excellent point. Radiology definitely counts. I think it ought to count double. I mean, you want to see if you get codes that how many codes and how many rapid responses get called to radiology. That's a major issue for the hospital to deal with and how they're going to cover these patients. And maybe should these people have been going down in the first place?
Exactly. So we found a lot of valuable information, not, you know, necessarily that we expected, but that we had a lot of value in systems learning by just finding out where they were being called to. And they were being called to places we didn't expect them to be going.
That's a good point. Thanks, Janet. So we'll try again, operator, if there's anyone that has any comments, or why don't we say, are there any problems that anyone has to the data collection proposal the way Raphael described it before?
Our next participant is Allison Johnson.
This is Hyacinth at North General Hospital. We're a small hospital, and it just seemed like the form at handout 3 would work better for us for our data collection.
Great. And do you understand everything that's included in there?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because, for instance, we have 2 shifts and some 3 shifts in the hospital. So for us, this form works much better. It's cleaner. It's easier to fill out. And I just think that would work better for us for the rapid response team.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from Brandon Young.
Hi. Vlad Kvetin is here with me from Montefiore. And a couple of things. One is that we were in agreement with what Dr. Rosen had said about excluding calls to the ICU, the ED, and the OR.
Okay.
One additional comment that I wanted to make is that regardless of the shape of the form, the data collection form, the number of cells to be filled in, I think it's important that you have to have definitions
mm-hmm.
on the form that make it clear, very clear, what you're looking for. You have to keep in mind that you're asking, I haven't counted the number of hospitals here, but a few dozen
right.
different data collectors
mm-hmm.
To provide information. And so the burden on this group is to come up with very clear definitions so the people who are taking the time and exhibiting the goodwill to provide data know exactly what they're being asked to do as opposed to having to guess.
This is Janet Nagamina. I just want to second that part of our learning curve was, you know, defining what we thought was seemingly obvious, which is what is a code. And a number of codes are called that weren't really codes. So we ended up defining it as the absence of respirations and or the absence of a pulse. And if it wasn't those two things, it would be converted into a RRS call rather than a code.
And from the conversation, this is Rafael again, from the conversation that's been going on, as far as which units can be excluded and which units shouldn't be included, one solution could be simply to add to the form, just put a single other column and say, where did the code take place? Did it take place in your ICU? Did it take place on the medical floor, in a cafeteria, in a hallway, in radiology? I mean, that way myself and my colleagues would have a much better idea about where these calls are actually occurring. And then, again, from the hospital perspective, it would simply be a matter of putting down maybe three or four letters on the paper and saying ICU or NICU or PICU or, wherever. And that might be one possible solution to sort of the issue about where a code should and should not be reported. Because if we have that information, we can always, after more discussion, we can go into the data and whatever's eventually decided, you know, that's what we can base the analysis on, and we can either exclude or include certain information based on, again, what the collaborative agrees upon.
So are there any comments on that? Some, I don't know if that would be a labor-intensive type of thing to collect, or should we just do what Brandon said and just add we had a definitions page that was separate from the form, but maybe we should just add some notes right to the form directly saying the codes collected for this collaborative exclude ED, ICU, and OR, or something of that nature.
And one other thing, Hillary, about the discharges code and death elements. Again, this is following from what Dr. Rosen was saying a little bit earlier and a comment that was made by one of the hospitals as far as how they should be reporting their discharges. One other thing that we could consider is to break down those into total discharges, total codes, and total deaths, and then the hospital can tell us, you know, how many of those codes did the RRT actually respond to? You know, how many of those discharges was the RRT actually, responsible for? And so, again, these are possible solutions to some of what's been discussed today.
Okay, I'm going to try one more time. Operator, does anyone else want to say anything about any of this conversation that's been happening about the data?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up to interact, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone.
Meanwhile, this is Mark. I got to give one more comment, and then I have to go.
Okay.
I would favor, if it really clears up confusion, a single column saying, where was the code in very broad strokes? ICU, ER, OR, other, or med-surg, or non-patient care unit. You know, hospital cafeteria would be included in that and things like that. So maybe just, you know, a checkbox with one of five categories, which would then we would at least post hoc, we can go back and find out where the codes were.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay, I got to go. Good luck, everybody. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
So just honing in on Dr. Rosen's idea, and really, because then we could do more with the data, so honing in on that and then also putting in clear definitions like Brandon Young suggested, is everyone comfortable with us changing the form around a little bit, more like the one shown here with some of the comments that Dr. Rosen said about adding the checkboxes? Operator, if we could just open it up one more time, then we'll lay the data discussion to bed.
Our next question or comment comes from Nicolette Fiore Lopez.
Hi, good afternoon. This is St. Charles Hospital, Kathleen Ledoux, and I'd like to just address two aspects. One is the time recording element. Personally, to me, as the reviewer with several members of nursing leadership of the code records, I think it's much easier of the rapid response records to look at it by shift. I think it's very difficult. Sometimes people do not write times correctly. We all know we should be using military times, but if people are using a paper system, they may not time it correctly. Sometimes we're tracking that time actually because we know the staff that are on duty. So if you say to me, did the code happen at 7:05 a.m., 7:05 p.m., it can be very difficult to ascertain sometimes. That's one thing. I think if you look at also a discrepancy where you had the number of codes per shift and you had the total number of codes where they did not always enter, I personally count where I did not have a time recorded or I did not know what shift it occurred on. So my own personal column would be days, nights, evenings, and unknown. I had no way to tell what happened on this. And again, I think that's a data collection aspect, perhaps where the SBAR form isn't as fully completed as it could be or should be. I also have some concern in listing every rapid response team on a revised format. We're very fortunate in that we utilize the current format in conjunction with our Hospital Quality Council format to provide information to departments within the facility and, for example, the Critical Care Committee, the PM&R Committee. So the current format allows us to give a quick snapshot as opposed to listing out every rapid response the way this projection is. We, of course, would do whatever the collaborative thinks is best, but I'm just not sure what we would gain by actually listing out every response.
Thanks, Kathy. Actually, so what we would do, Kathy, what the hospitals would do is give us the data in this format, and then we would feed them back the data in more of comprehensive charts. So it may seem like it's more, you know, it's not summarized. It's definitely more patient level this way, without any kind of patient indicators, of course, on the data. But it would actually become more of, you know, us feeding back hospital-specific charts that aren't patient-specific, that are aggregated. So that's, you know, you probably knew that, but I just wanted to reinforce that.
This is Nikki Fiore Lopez. I'm here with Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is that it does not break it down by areas of the hospital. And we here, and I think other facilities as well, are very concerned with the areas of the hospital mm-hmm. that this may be, that we're looking at rapid responses, because we, in addition to the nursing units, as someone on a previous call had said, look at other areas such as radiology, because we do determine the needs in those areas, be it through education, equipment, whatever the case may be. So we're concerned about this as well because it does not break it down to the areas of the facility where the rapid response team is called.
Okay.
This is Janet Nagumini. I think it sounds like if we do add that extra column and ask that question, that it may sort of meet both needs of the data reporting requirements as well as the system level information that you want to know so that you could appropriately respond to the demands of your particular medical center. And as far as, you know, documentation and data collection, I'm just curious with the folks at St. Charles, who is doing the chart reviews? Because what we found was that the RRS responders got very good at keeping track of what time did my beeper go off, what time did I show up, and what time did we end the call. They got very skilled at that. So rather than somebody going back and trying to figure that out, we asked the folks who responded to really document those times closely, and we found that they were very capable of doing that once they understood why it was important.
We have multiple people on the who are members of the rapid response team that do review the chart, in addition to physicians, respiratory therapy. People who are on the team do review the charts. I just have one final comment in regard to whether or not we should be including ICU, EDs, and other areas such as critical care areas. For those of us that are in smaller facilities as opposed to tertiary care facilities, I believe the rule of thumb should really be whether or not there's physician presence 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I think in those areas, in those facilities that have, for example, 24/7 coverage of intensivists, perhaps critical care unit rapid responses should not be counted. But in small facilities such as community hospitals, where there is not 24/7 coverage of physicians, then those areas should be covered.
Janet, do you have any comment about that? Because I know that's a big issue, you know, the difference between the tertiary and the smaller community hospitals.
I guess I didn't understand whether she was saying that they should be included and counted or that they should be covered. I didn't quite.
We should include the numbers of rapid responses that are called in areas that do not have 24/7 coverage of physicians.
Right, and I completely understand the differences, and I think it's an important piece of information for two reasons. So what we're really struggling with here is we're asking the question of, are we collecting the data to test the effects of the RRS intervention, or are we collecting the data for general system learning so that we can change what we do and identify the issues? So I think that, you know, how this data is ultimately used is up to sort of the collaborative, and it may sort of have two components to it. So the research question may be RRS and intervention for certain hospitals, and it may be a broader question for other hospitals. Raphael, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, again, just to reiterate that what we provide back to a collaborative is highly dependent on what we get from the collaborative. And so if we have more complete data and if we have more accurate data reporting, then that puts us in a position to give back more useful information to the members of the collaborative. And so, you know, I think from an analytic point of view, the take-home message is this. Whatever the collaborative decides, we really need to focus on uniform reporting. However the codes are defined, however the shifts, whether or not they're reported, are on the form. But the key to providing you with really useful information is getting to us uniform and accurate data. And so all of these questions that we've been talking about, the shift question, the code question, and the discharges, and which units should and should not be reported, it all comes back to one thing. How can we provide the best possible data to allow us to provide the best possible interpretation and results for you to use? So that's why this conversation is so very important.
And my bias there, Rafael, is I feel more comfortable with more than less, because you have the data, and then you can figure out what to do with it and what trends or themes are emerging, as opposed to not having it and then not being able to really figure out what happened.
And that's definitely a good point, but we need to weigh that against the quality that we get for the amount. So if I had the choice to say I want more data with a higher probability of incomplete submissions or missing elements, or if I had the choice of having a little bit less data but have a higher accuracy to that data, I would choose the second option.
Right. And I think, though, that what I'm hearing from this group, and I'm not sure we've heard from everybody, is that it wouldn't be that difficult to add two letters or four letters, ER, OR, ICU, or NICU, to the form.
And again, we could make them check boxes, so it would just be a simple check.
Right. And I think I heard the same thing, Janet. So what we could do then, we could revamp this a bit, add those check boxes, pass it around the collaborative, see what you think, and then maybe even pilot a month of reporting like that and see how it goes.
That sounds very reasonable.
Okay. So before we'll that's what we'll do. I'll say we'll open it up one more time just to make sure that no one has any problems with that, and then we'll send out the tool. So before we get into it, we only have 15 minutes of the call left. So, operator, if there's anyone else that has anything to say about the data, then we're going to lay it to rest and have Janet talk about the SBAR training sessions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. We do have comment from Iris Berman.
Hi. I just wanted to know if people are incorporating, we have, for example, Code Neuro for stroke care, which we have not been sending in along with our rapid response data, which would influence in terms of the numbers of responses we have for non-code situations. Would you be requiring that data as well? Because we have that in a separate form and a separate code. Hello?
No, we're here.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I didn't.
All right, when we think somebody is exhibiting signs and symptoms of a stroke, we code neuro.
Okay.
So a stroke team.
That data has not been sent to you with our rapid response, yet it is a form of rapid response.
True. I would.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how many other facilities are doing the same thing or not doing the same thing, and how that would skew your data.
Who responds to code neuro?
Stroke team.
The stroke team, it's a critical care nurse, it's respiratory therapy, radiology prepares by hearing the overhead page, so they know that they have to get the CAT scan ready.
Yes.
But it's essentially a rapid response.
Mm. My gut would say it's
really
is
the same team.
Counted, but Janet, I would defer to you.
Yeah, and I would defer to Kathy Duncan, but what I believe that we do is we count them separately.
Okay.
But I would talk to Kathy about that, because I think there are groups doing it both ways.
My understanding is that there are some facilities that are including code neuros or whatever they're calling them, are incorporating that into their rapid response, and others are separating it out.
Right.
They don't have a standardized data
And that's the key, is that this particular group does it consistently, and there are groups doing it both ways. But it, again, goes back to the question that you're asking about the intervention here and the rapid response system.
And it's essentially the same team responding.
Yeah. So I would defer to Kathy on that.
So, Iris, we'll get in touch with Kathy Duncan about that one and see what other groups have done, and then we'll follow up with the whole group about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We now have a question or comment from Stacey Mullen.
Hi. Hello. This is Stacey Mullen from Long Island College Hospital.
Hi, Stacey.
I have a question about the data. I'm concerned because, you know, initially when I was doing the average time of encounter and the average time of response, we decided that since our goal is to get that data 100% of the time, but you know, unfortunately, that's not always what happens. Sometimes the forms come back to us, and we always know when the event starts because we can get the operator's log. But if somebody doesn't fill in when they arrived and when they left, it's often not captured. So what we had been doing is we used whatever we had. We averaged out whatever we had. So I'll be more than happy to send you what I have, but it may be incomplete data. I don't know if other people are having this issue. And, you know, we've addressed people about documentation, about putting these things down, but it still continues to be an issue.
Okay, and this is for the encounter time.
Right, because if, you know, that's why, you know, I always know, you know, I can give you all, you know, when the calls occurred because I have the operator's log, but the operator's log does not capture how long the, you know, when they arrived at the call and how long that it took them to take care of the patient. And I don't know if anyone else has is having any of these issues, but when I saw that you wanted data for each call, it concerned me a little bit.
Okay. We have not heard anything like that, Stacey, but that doesn't mean that there are issues similar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stacey, this is Janet Nagami. Just one idea. How we dealt with that is we had an ICU nurse educator and the ICU manager really closely involved in this, and every time there was a call, they, like almost real time that day or the following day, would look at the log. And so looking at it as close to the time that it happened, finding the people was how we dealt with it.
Oh, you went back and you
and
looked.
Eventually
okay.
People realized that they would be stalked if there was a blank line, so they started doing it.
Okay, and what about like people who don't hand in the documentation at all? We've had that problem as well.
Real-time stalking has worked.
Stalking, okay. That's a good. I'm going to bring that up to our committee. I mean, because I'm sure that other people, this is not, you know, only a Litch issue. I mean, I'm sure other people have had this issue, but I thank you for your advice.
Sure.
Thanks, Janet. Operator, is there anyone else in the queue?
Yes, we have two more in the queue. Our next question or comment comes from Cindy Mazzetti.
Hi, it's New York Hospital, Queens.
Hi.
Hi. We've been trying to buzz in, but I guess we were having some phone issues about the different issues. The form, you know, we agree that, you know, it's important to us as far as, like, the shift and knowing that, because determining where you need to put your resources, because we have actually, you know, two dedicated nurses for that. So that was one comment.
Okay.
We are experiencing the same issue sometimes as Litch about the missing data elements. But now that we have the two RNs, it's not so much of an issue, but except on the one day, Sunday, when they're not covering, sometimes we don't get the forms and stuff in, but they do go and try to follow up the next day. The other thing I wanted to comment on, I know on the data collection form, I thought that we were collecting some data on end-of-life issues or any change in decisions, and I didn't see that on the data.
Well, that's not on here, Cindy. That's part of the voluntary data element.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So that's we wanted to focus on the mandatory ones today.
Okay.
But we're probably going to have a whole separate conference call on the voluntary ones also.
So will that be included on the form, or will that be a separate form?
We'll include the voluntary elements on the form.
Okay.
And I know it sounds like a lot of people have been getting a lot out of the ones that you actually just said.
Right. And as far as the stroke team, we do have a separate stroke team here, but we do not include those in our rapid response.
Okay. Okay, that's great to know. Thanks, Cindy.
Okay.
And let me just chime in for a sec. This is Rafael. I know there seems to be some concern about not being able to know the time when the call was reported, so the shift time. That's so let me just clarify, just because you would not be reporting by shift wouldn't mean that if you gave us the time that the call occurred and the time the call occurred, that's not to say that we can't give that information back to you in a time frame. So just because you yourself are not reporting by shift, because like some of you have said, your shifts do vary between hospitals. And so one way to get a little consistency is just to give us the time. And then when we report back to you, those calls can be broken out into, say, you know, between 7 and 7, 7 in the morning and 7 at night, and then 7 at night to 7 in the morning, or we could even break it up into 3 8-hour time frames. So that way, you know, your own specific institution can make a call whether or not, you know, like one of you said, whether your resources are in the right place.
Right. So if we had the times from you, we could create categories of time frames. So, operator, I know you said there was one other person in the queue.
Yes, our last question or comment comes from Brandon Young.
I was going to let Vlad go first.
Okay.
Simple question, I guess. How many of the teams are nursing response only, and how many of the teams are physician response at night?
Oh, at night?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the answer to that. I know the composition among the collaborative participants varies, though. But we could probably find that out from some of the members of the 33 hospitals in the data to see which are more physician-driven responses versus nurse-driven in the evening.
Right. Hillary, our major issue has become that we are absolutely unable to get ICU nursing on the response.
Okay.
We can guarantee 24/7 ICU physicians and respiratory therapists, but not ICU nursing assignment. So I just wanted to know, you know, what the rough breakdown is in this collaborative.
You know what, Dr. Kvetin, we'll get you a breakdown when we send up a follow-up email. We'll include that and try to get some information from the 33 hospitals that have submitted data.
Right.
See if we can get that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brandon.
I had a couple of questions. One is that I'm always a little concerned when we start talking about the analysis, what we can produce from a study depends on what we get from the data submissions, as opposed to sort of going the other direction, which is that we have objectives for the study. We want to be able to make statements in the end about X, Y, and Z. And therefore, in order to do that, we have to collect certain data elements, and we have to do that in a consistent fashion. And so that raises the question about just sort of the objectives for the collaborative. What are the sort of the very basic set of questions from the collaborative that we hope to be able to answer in, you know, a year's time or whatever the time frame might be. And from those objectives, we then need to make sure that we have some very clear definitions about data elements that are going to allow us to perform an analysis and draw conclusions related to those objectives. Somewhat along those lines, there are two different organizations now have mentioned the notion of stroke response teams and whether they should or should not be counted. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other than it should be the same, that they're either counted or they're not counted, and that becomes part of the definition that's made very clear to any organizations that are submitting data as part of the collaborative. And then I have one other comment or one other question that's somewhat different, and that is there any need to have data regarding patient disposition at the end of a rapid response call, whether the patient was transferred to an ICU, left on the floor, died, or what have you?
That's, Brandon, that is kind of incorporated in the voluntary element, but not the mandatory.
Okay.
All
of those are just, or the last question?
Just the last question.
Okay.
About the disposition. It's more, the question, on the voluntary element, it's more, it's really not disposition, though. It's more, was the patient transferred to a higher level of care?
Okay.
How many patients were transferred to a higher level of care? But maybe we should think of collecting disposition also. I mean, it's something that we did not include.
And again, that was something that I mentioned a little earlier, is that if we break down mortality and discharges and codes by total and by which one the RRS team responded to or responsible for, that's really getting at what Brandon is asking.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this then? There was a lot of information that was presented here. We're actually right about 3:15, which I know is sort of the end of our call, but we want Janet to talk a little bit about the SBAR sessions. But we'll summarize this, and then we'll put together kind of a streamlined data collection form and be really sensitive to some of the things that were said here, including definitions about the data elements and making sure we're consistent with reporting. Does that sound like a plan, Raphael, for?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if anyone has any questions about this or additional comments, if they want to contact either Raphael or me about it, we'll be sure to try to address those as much as possible.
And I suppose I should give my contact information.
Good.
My phone number is 212-506-5406. My email is ruiz@gnyha.org. And feel free to contact me like Hillary said.
Thank you. So, Janet, I know we're kind of running out of time, but we do want to talk a little bit about the SBAR training sessions just because they are coming up. Over the next week or so, we're going to be sending the CEOs of participating hospitals an invitation for the teams to attend the SBAR training sessions, which are scheduled for the 12th and the 13th of April now. It's a Thursday and a Friday. So, Janet, if you wouldn't mind going through sort of the goals and the structure that we talked about.
Sure. So just to let you know, I will come up with a written description of this, but just a description of the two sessions. One is a full day on April 12th, and it's really an overview of teamwork, communication, and patient safety, because we believe that SBAR is not one of those things that's a standalone tool. So the morning session of the 12th is really foundation knowledge, overview of sort of the magnitude of teamwork and communication failures in healthcare, gaining some insight into the problems that exist and why they exist. And then we're going to cover some safety science principles like crew resource management, human factors, high reliability organizations, what are they about, and systems thinking. And then we're going to cover the specific teamwork and communication skills that are used in those types of safety environments like briefing, assertion, situational awareness, and SBAR. And we'll also cover the attitudes, culture, and leadership that's necessary to make things like SBAR successful. So that's the morning, a lot of foundation knowledge. And in the afternoon, we're going to have breakout sessions where you actually get to do SBAR, and then we're going to have planning and implementation segment where we talk about the application of SBAR both at a micro and a macro level, i.e. the individual level as well as the system level in handoffs. We're going to talk about critical success factors to make it successful, and we're also going to talk about the IHI spread model. So in a nutshell, that's the full-day session on the 12th. And the audience for the full-day session, because it requires the culture change and all of that, we're saying you could include frontline mid-managers, but we also would like to have nursing educators, project managers, senior leaders there, because as we said, it will only be successful if it involves the leadership and the culture change around it. Now, the second day is a 2 4-hour session, so like from I think we said 8 to 12 or 1 to 5, 4 hours, and it's really condensed in terms of the foundation knowledge from the first day. So we're going to cover the same topics, but a lot more superficially. And the focus for the second day is really learning how to do SBAR, more so than how to teach it and implement it. It's more for frontline or middle managers. There's going to be less planning and less implementation on the second day. So we're really just focusing on the skill itself. Does that make sense, Hillary?
Yes, definitely. So just how Janet described it is how we are going to put it together in a letter to your hospital CEOs. And the other thing that we just want to tell you, these SBAR sessions will not replace the second learning session. We're just going to have them actually at this point. What we decided is to have them before the first learning, the second learning session, I'm sorry, and then we'll have the second learning session still at a date to be determined, more probably toward the end of April or beginning of May, but we do realize it was a lot, so we didn't want to have them so close together. So we just wanted to let you know that the second learning session will still happen. We just need to determine a date, and we don't want to overwhelm you with too many things. So, but I thought that was a great overview, and we'll see if anyone has any questions for Janet about the session since we have her on the phone here. So, operator, does anyone have any questions for Janet about the SBAR sessions?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. Again, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, please press the 1 button on your touch-tone phone. We appear to have no questions.
Okay. Just one thing Terry and I want to say. We do want to get active participation on this. We do encourage you to bring frontline staff, to invite others from your hospital outside of the direct rapid response teams. And, of course, I know we always say this, I feel like a broken record sometimes, hospital leadership is so essential. So if they could at least come to part of one of the days that you choose, that would be wonderful.
And this is Janet. One more thing. Physicians, particularly hospitals, physicians are great to bring to these.
That's great.
That's great. Yeah, really try to disseminate it and invite a broad array of folks outside of the team, folks that really can carry the message and who are respected by their peers.
Okay. So we're really excited for that. That pretty much takes us to the end of the agenda. We know we have a lot of follow-up to do with all of you. We took some copious notes here, and we'll be back in touch with you really soon, just with a summary of what was expressed here with regard to the data, as well as a form, and again, taking into consideration consistency. We know that really is the key here. So, Jan, is there anything else you want to add before we split off, or Terry?
No, I just want to apologize that there are so many growing pains with the data. We did go through this with the CLABS project. We were well into the project, and then we had to put the brakes on, reevaluate the data in the process, and reevaluate and come to consensus for a second or third time. In the end, the product was a much better product, and we can only expect things like this would happen with 33 folks involved in a process in different types of institutions. So I just ask your patience with this, and we will get to where we need to be with all of it. So great job, everyone.
Thanks, Terry. Thank you so much, everyone.